Radio.
Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
Radio.
The Poor People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio. Radio.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to OCAP Radio for this Friday, May 7th, here on CKLN 88.1. Good evening. And this evening we're having a great show. We have Gaetan from, who's an OCAP member and a former employee of Street Health will be here talking to us about, some situation that's been ongoing at Street Health for a couple of years now. And, there's an event being held May 12th, at noon at Allen Gardens. And we'll be speaking to Gaetan about the history around that. And after that, we'll be speaking to Lisa Schofield, one of the organizers for OCAP, about, where Raise the Rates in Ontario is at, where that campaign is at, and how that relates to the G20 and the G8 talks that are being held here in Toronto in June. First of all, as always, I'd like to talk to you a bit about OCAP and how OCAP is run. OCAP is a non-funded organization, or not doesn't get any government funding whatsoever. It's funded entirely by folks like yourselves, listeners out there, and supporters of poor people and poor people's rights. Make donations to OCAP, and we're always looking for more donations. We operate on a shoestring budget, so if you would like to donate to OCAP, go to www.ocap.ca, and also on the website you can get information about upcoming campaigns and what's happening in the lives of poor people around Ontario. So I encourage you to head to that website and check out what's on there. Now, up next, we're going to talk to Gaetan Héroux, an OCAP member, and we're going to talk to him about what's going on at Street Health these days and what people are doing around the situation there. Now, do we have Gaetan on the line here? Gaetan, hello? Hi, Gaetan?
Yeah, hi, Kelly.
Hi, Gaetan. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. Thanks for coming on here. So wanted to ask you, we had you on the show a couple of months ago to talk about the situation with Street Health. Can you update me or give me a little bit of back history on that?
Yeah. Well, basically what happened a while back is staff at Street Health decided that they wanted to bring in a union because there were issues going on at Street Health. Got certified, and then for about a year and a half we're trying to get a contract with the employer, and we're having a hard time. As a result of that, there were many demonstrations. There were people from outside the agencies that wrote letters in support of the staff, including a group called the Friends of Street Health, which included some ex-executive directors and managers and staff of Street Health.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I just ask you, how many staff has Street Health lost in the last couple of years?
Well, out of the 16 staff that voted for the union at the time, mm-hmm. I think there are about five or six left right now. They've had a huge turnover since all this conflict occurred.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And management has not been supportive of the unionization effort.
No, they haven't. But what happened is a few months back, the contract was finalized, mm-hmm. and they have a contract now at Street Health. However, my personal situation still remains. I was subsequently fired by my employer, Neighborhood Link, for refusing to move to a different location after we wrote a letter of support to the board. And what's been happening over the last few months right now is I'm currently unemployed, but we've been continuing to mobilize to try and get the administrative office to come back to Street Health in downtown Core, where it belongs, and there's actually a demonstration being planned for May the 12th in Allen Gardens. The main issue right now, I think, is that that's one of the issues, but the main issue right now is the fact that the board and Street Health and Neighborhood Link also are refusing to listen to the community. There's been overwhelming support from the community in terms of returning the service to Street Health, including
and this service
totaled over 1,300 names, and also numerous public demonstrations and a public meeting. There have been letters from many people who work in the community, who live in the community, and basically Laura Cowan, I don't know, Lester, the chair of the board, and Mary McGowan, who's the ED at Neighborlink, continue to refuse to listen to people.
And this service that you're talking about is the paid ID program.
Yeah, it's the administrative office of the paid project for the downtown core. So mm-hmm. it was moved 5 miles away from where all the identification clinics were. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a big battle. The other thing that's coming out probably by Monday is three people were asked to actually investigate the move, and there's a report coming out actually on Monday that we'll be making public in terms of the effect that moving the service has had on clients, or why it wasn't the best move.
Right, and is this people separate from Neighborhood Link are doing this investigation?
Yeah, it's three well-known activists, and well, it's Herman Rosenfeld and Irina Sarek, who are well known, and we've asked them to interview some people, and they've interviewed some people who were intimately connected with the program,
mm-hmm.
And some past managers and past Street Health staff, and they're going to come up with their findings.
And when this report is made public, will that be on the OCAP website? How can people access this?
Yeah, my hope is that it will go. It'll be there on the OCAP website, and also if they get a hold of OCAP. Our intention is to make this report very public and send it to all of the agencies in the neighborhood and to staff, because a lot of people have questions about what happened there.
Yeah, and in terms of the larger picture of Street Health and history of Street Health, Street Health was started by folks from the streets?
Yes. Some of them actually I knew. Jordan Barnhart being one of them and several others. And I know that Kathy Hartle, who was one of the, at one time was an index director of Street Health, mm-hmm. was also involved at some point when the agency was developed. She's actually going to speak on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, is that the 12th?
Yeah, Wednesday, May the 12th, in Ongrance at 12. But mm-hmm. she, the agency has a long, long history of working with homeless people, and that's actually how most of the services were set up, is by talking to people on the streets, and from there developing programs that you know, go directly to where people are and that kind of stuff. They've always been very, very involved. And also, the Street Health has had a long, long history of advocating around issues of poverty. I still remember talking to Barry German about the Gina Jaubert inquest in 1986. She was a woman that froze to death, and Street Health was involved in helping put that inquest, or forcing that inquest to happen. A coalition was formed, and there are numerous examples like that throughout the history of Street Health.
And how long has...
Two or three years, however, management, in particular Laura Cowan, and the board, Eleanor Lester, have been trying to impose a kind of a corporate model on Street Health, to the point now that they've actually hired a group called Optimal Performance Consultants, mm-hmm. which is a corporate organization that looks at, you know, a lot of people have been forced to leave on sick leave as a result of some of the conflict. So this corporation actually looks at people's medical records, and they decide whether someone comes back or not. These are the dynamics of it right now.
Wow, those sound like a serious shift from the beginning and the mandate of Street Health. It sounds, what the perception out there is that they're changing from being focused on input from people living in poverty to away from that, and they're no longer listening. Is that true?
Well, there's a lot of that going on. Obviously, the Street Health continues to offers services that are very, very valuable in terms of the nursing services, the mental health services, the ID service. There's still an ID service there, and some of the harm reduction. The problem is there has been some key people who have left, Zoe being one of them, who used to work with the harm reduction model program and the Hep C program, and quite a few people have left. What's more important, however, in terms of what's going on right now is the way that staff have been intimidated and harassed over the last year has actually forced a lot of people to leave, and some very, very good people. And people continue to leave. I just heard recently that another staff that was voted for the union is probably going to be leaving within the next weeks. And that means that, over the next year or so, Street Health will be a very, very different organization.
And
when it was first founded.
Wow, and that's going to be a real shame for the community. Now, Gaetan, you have a long history of speaking out where no one else does. Are there other former staff that are speaking out with you on this?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's tons of support, but what people have to understand is in terms of this particular situation, there are people still at Street Health whose jobs would be threatened if they openly supported me in terms of what's going on. But the important thing also, again, around this kind of stuff is that staff at Street Health or Street, the history of Street Health is important because it's been one of the main agencies in East Downtown Toronto that's taking the lead in terms of speaking out, and more now as we move into a new era, we have agencies who are very, very afraid to talk about what's going on and you know, won't take the streets or won't accept flyers and that kind of stuff. So it's important for us to have a presence in the neighborhood by getting rid of the advocacy and the problem. The most progressive workers that are there, it means then that when issues around policing, around housing, around welfare, you name it, around the special diet, and when those issues arise and these agencies need to speak, that voice will disappear.
And you feel that Street Health could potentially be heading towards this a less of an advocacy role?
Oh, it will,
role.
because it's lost some of its most progressive people.
Absolutely. And Gaetan, do you think that this is related to funding matters? Is this because it's funded by government agencies?
Well, I think there's a lot of that. I mean, there's a new LINS program that they call it, which is my understanding is that the Ministry of Health has handed over health money to these LINS organizations across Ontario, and I think there is a new model now in terms of how these agencies are supposed to work, in terms of how that health money is supposed to be used, and more it's become like a corporate model. You know, want to see outcomes, what they call outcomes in terms of what people are doing. The work that Street Health has been over the years has been much, much more grassroots. There's been a lot of individual support that goes on, but it's actually the other work that's been very, very significant in terms of even when Street Health came out with its which a very, very important report in the early 1990s around how homeless people were receiving health care. It was a very, very important report at that time. Those kinds of things were beginning to go away.
Are going to go away, and that's going to be a huge loss for the Downtown East End community. Well, so you're asking for the public support on May 12th at noon at Allen Gardens.
Yes, we're going to have food there, barbecue, and then we're going to march over to Street Health, and there'll be several speakers there that will talk about the need for Street Health to be held accountable, because ultimately that agency, its history and its roots are in the community, and they have to listen. There's no way that someone like Laura Cowan or Lester have the right to usurp that power. I mean, that's our power. That's our history in East Downtown Toronto. That we when we need to confront issues and people don't listen, then we take to the streets. We organize. We mobilize. And it's really, really, really disturbing that those. That kind of direct action right now is—we're forced to use that against an agency that historically has had a very, very progressive history.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I wish you well in this struggle, Gaetan. I'll see you on May 12th at Allen Gardens,
okay.
And thank you very much for being here today.
Okay, thank you for having me on. Thanks.
Bye now. And up next, we'll be hearing a song called "Sorry Sorry" by Fela Kuti during our break. and welcome back to OCAP Radio. I'm your host, Kelly Burgess, and we just had a great conversation with Gaëtan Héroux of OCAP and a former employee of Street Health. You can support Gaëtan and other former employees of Street Health on May 12th, Wednesday, May 12th at noon in Allen Gardens. Up next, we'll be talking to Lisa Schofield of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. Now, Lisa's one of the organizers there, and she'll be talking to us about Raise the Rates, an ongoing campaign here in Ontario to raise welfare and disability rates to a livable wage, to a livable allowance, and how that connects to the G20. Lisa, can you hear me?
I can.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So, Lisa, can you tell us a bit of the history of the Raise the Rates campaign and what's happened lately?
Sure. So, I mean, the Raise the Rates campaign officially started in 2005 as it was called the Raise the Rates campaign, but demands for a raise in welfare and disability rates have certainly been a part of OCAP's history for a long time, basically since the Harris government cut welfare rates by 21.6% in 1995, and little has been done to reinstate any funding to welfare and disability since that time.
As I understand, they've raised it by very paltry amounts, 1%, 2%, nothing that makes up any substantial amount.
And I mean that, for example, this year they raised it by 1%, but inflation for this year is expected to be 1.9%. So it's really just a sort of media show. They throw out these numbers, but in reality, people today are living on rates that are at least 40 to some estimate 55% below where they actually should be or where they were before the 1995 cuts.
Where they were in 1995, over 15 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Raise the Rates campaign has been, you know, a part, or the demand for raising welfare and disability rates has been a part of OCAP for a long time. But the official campaign was started in 2005, and a huge part of that was because of what people found was this benefit called the special diet allowance. And the special diet was extra money that people could get on their checks, up to $250 per person, including children, on your checks, if you could get a medical provider, health provider, to fill out a form saying that you needed this money for a special diet for food. And so this was used, and people started to access this on a massive scale, with supportive health providers who, you know, think about and talk about how people who are living on low welfare rates are prone to illness because they do not have access to money, they don't have access to food. Mm-hmm. So they started to help people fill out these forms, and the special diet grew from a $6 million a year program to a $200 million a year program as a result of, I would say, as a result of the Raise the Rates campaign and the efforts of other anti-poverty activists across Ontario.
That's an astronomical, that's amazing, that
yeah.
raise. that's great. So where is the special diet at today?
Well, the special diet has been, you know, under attack basically since 2006. Like, it was started to be mass publicized, people started to get on it, and, you know, it was a way for people to raise their rates by taking this money back. But in 2006, the government changed the way that you could fill the forms. They changed what was on the forms, and they made it so it was an amount, a dollar amount was attached to a particular medical condition. Lots of things were left off that list. It was a huge mess. But still people were continuing to access the program and use it as a way to get more money on their checks. And for people who have, you know, disabilities and people who have those special diets and those needs, it just started to become known about, whereas previously it wasn't known about. It was a sort of purposeful silence around the allowance on the part of the government. So since 2006, it's been changed, and sort of they keep trying to find a way to take access away from people. But still, the dollar amount has been going up to now it's a $200 million a year program. And in the fall, the Auditor General of Ontario in his report, he attacked the special diet within this framework of, you know, we're in an economic crisis, how could people be committing welfare fraud, these scammers, these lazy people, blah, 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 that sort of classic attack on people who are on social assistance, the sort of Harris language around, you know, these lazy poor people sort of thing.
Right.
And so the Auditor General took aim at the special diet, and not to our surprise, a few months later, just this past March, on the 25th of March, the provincial government announced their budget, and they announced that they're cutting the special diet completely. They're completely taking it away. Mm-hmm. And they say they're putting in a new program, but we know that that new program is going to be run by the Ministry of Health, that it's going to be a fraction, a tiny, tiny fraction of access to funding that the special diet was. So essentially the government has cut $200 million worth of money going into welfare and disability. So,
and that was money that allowed people to live and buy food in a decent way. Families to afford food.
Money.
That was essential money that they had been able to get to access, and that's gone now.
Yeah,
that's horrific. So, and what has been the response of folks on welfare and disability?
Well, I mean, people are obviously outraged by this, and it's the third largest cut to welfare and disability in the history of Ontario. The first was in the 30s. The second was Harris in 1995. And then the third was this, right? And it's under the McGuinty Liberals. And I think it's become very clear that the Liberal government is not a friend to poor people. Mm-hmm. And so there's massive outrage. And on April 15th, there was a large demonstration that marched to the Ministry of Community and Social Services. And the plan is that, you know, we're going to keep up that fight. And mm-hmm. On May 20th, we're going to be taking it to the doorsteps of local members of parliament, provincial members of parliament, to their constituency offices mm-hmm. Across Ontario.
That's a provincial
And then again
round.
On June 17th, we're going to have another large demonstration because we really need to keep up this pressure to demand that they give back the special diet. This is disgusting that they're taking this money away from Ontario's poor citizens. They're essentially taking a food benefit away from Ontario's poor citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna go back to the Ministry of Community and Social Services on June 17th. So
you're encouraging folks to come out and support those really important struggles that people are facing with the special diet.
Yeah, and also just to say that this is going to be a long fight.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. We know it's not going to end on May 20th or June 17th.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a campaign that needs to grow and needs to spread across the province.
And it
so
sounds
people
like it
are
is.
Interested in getting involved, they should contact us at OCAP.
And there's an interesting story, isn't there, about a woman in North Bay who was not connected to the campaign and started her own demonstration in North Bay. Am I right about that?
Yeah. This woman, she actually lost her special diet, mm-hmm. and she contacted OCAP, and she was outraged that she'd lost her special diet, and she decided that she wanted to do a demonstration in North Bay. And so a group of people, you know, a week after we held the demonstration in downtown Toronto, a group of people in North Bay organized a march through the main area of North Bay, and they're going to be participating again and on May 20th, and they're going to be participating again in other things that are coming up. So this is something that's growing, and definitely the amount of phone calls that we're getting in the office of people who are like, what the hell's going on? I lost my money, or I heard it's going to be cut. What's happening with this?
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. And so this is going to be a huge response to this cut.
So people are really mobilizing around this. And now, Lisa, can you tell me how this relates to the leaders, or so-called leaders, meeting here in Toronto for the G20 in the end of June?
Oh, sure. I mean, I can try. I think what's important to talk about with the G20 coming to Toronto at this time is that we are in the midst of an economic crisis. We have been for 2 years, and it's certainly not going away. It's getting a lot worse for poor and working class people. And I think what the G20 represents and what they, you know, what they themselves say they represent is the solution to the economic crisis. They are coming to talk about solutions to the problems in the economy and basically the failures of capitalism. That's what they're doing in Toronto. And I think, you know, what we're seeing in Greece right now is a response to that economic strategy, where the IMF in Greece is trying to push through structural adjustment programs to force cuts in the public sector. Mm-hmm. And the public sector is responding by saying, hell no, you're not going to be paying for this economic crisis and the money you lost in your capitalist games on the backs of poor and working class people. You're not going to make us pay for that. Mm-hmm. And the G20, you know, that's the IMF is a part of the G20. They sit on the G20, and that's the economic policy that they represent. They represent economic policies that look to internationally right now force poor people and working class people to pay the bill of the economic crisis. That's through public sector cuts, like the special diet cut. Mm-hmm. Is a huge example of a public sector cut. As well as now we're seeing attacks on public sector workers, and that is this G20 economic policy that's international, right? And it's happening in Greece, it's happening here. Mm-hmm. So it's a policy that we need to fight against.
And it has very, very acute local ramifications for folks.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming on with us tonight, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
And talking about the current campaign. We really appreciate that. And we look forward to seeing you on May 20th and June 17th. And we'll continue the struggle.
Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. All right. So that was our show this evening for OCAP Radio. I've been your host, Kelly Burgess. I want to thank Mark Brill for doing tech and Kristen and Susie for always helping us out, for Lisa Schofield and Gaetan Ayroux for speaking with us tonight. I hope to see you all out at in the next couple of months as we have some important fights and struggles to get out there and support. And as always, check out www.ocap.ca for more information.